Good afternoon. I'd like to call to order the study session for the Mesa City Council for Monday, December 8th, 2008. Thank you so very much for meeting a bit early today so we can get through some of these important budget items. First thing on the agenda is to review the minutes for tonight's council meeting. As soon as I can find them. There we go. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5.
Mayor, Council, John, do you want to point out the amended language for 5D? Just talk to what it speaks to, because okay. We kind of added that at the last.
Okay. Yes, very briefly. Mayor and Council, with regard to the Mesa Gateway Strategic Development Plan, we added a little language from what had been out earlier in the public to the document you would have received last week. In the very last page, as we had continued our review and discussions with some of the stakeholders have been involved in this, we recognized a need to be a little bit clearer about a couple of items. One has to do with some of the infrastructure in the area and the continued work we're going to need to do to investigate particularly the water and sewer lines, prioritizing those and how they're going to be funded and getting those put in. So that's mentioned in that implementation section there on the last page about addressing that. Then also the transportation network and the need to, we've studied the interior area very well as part of this process. We need to go outside the actual gateway boundaries a little bit and look at that larger area so traffic flows to and from. So we mentioned that again in that last paragraph of working on that larger transportation study, bringing some of those stakeholders together for more in-depth transportation analysis.
Okay. Thank you. And by the way, a fine job of stapling the staff. They are to be commended.
Yeah. We do what we can.
Straight and everything. Thank you. Page 5. Anything else? Yes, Councilmember Richens.
Could we get a little bit more detail on 5F? That looked like an interesting deal that's happening. It looks like we're selling off some property. Yeah.
5F, Mr. Dibjiniak. 5F is authorizing the sale of units 2 and 3 of the Carousel Condominium, which is the fourth floor in the downtown here, to the Mesa Community College currently uses.
Correct. Thank you, Mayor. Councilman Richens, the sale is of a city-owned, actually, condominium that the city has leased previously to MCC.
Let's make sure everyone understands. A condominium is not a housing unit. It is a form of ownership. And the reason it's a condominium is because?
There is separate ownership involved in the condominium, and you want me to go in a different direction?
Oh, no, that's it. It's the fourth floor of the building. It's not the whole building. It's just part of the building. And so the ownership of the building, each floor is owned differently. And so is it a unit in and of itself? But we don't own a condo where people live and things like that. It's just the legal, the nature of the ownership. Okay?
Thank you, Mayor.
All right.
So we are selling what amounts to units 2 and 3. And again, that is one floor of the building and the airspace for reserved for future office space development. This was a piece that was discussed. It was a desire of MCC to go forward with the purchase, and they are actually keeping their fire sciences here in the downtown in exchange for the sale of the condominium. Any other questions?
Councilman Richens?
No, I thought it was a kind of a significant thing. It's kind of a move towards not owning everything in downtown and getting some things in semi-private ownership. I guess MCC wouldn't be completely private ownership, but I thought it was important to point that out, that the city is looking and evaluating those things. And just want to commend you on getting MCC here with I love it that they have some skin in the game, so they're committed to being down here. Thanks.
Thank you. And I think especially in light of the fact that we went through an announcement of 3 months ago where MCC was not keeping their P20 program, in downtown, but was moving that program out to the Dobson campus. And the thought was that somehow MCC would not have a presence downtown, when in fact, in many ways, their presence has been more solidified by the fact that in exchange for selling this, part of the deal is that MCC will consolidate some programs that are currently taking place outside the downtown area, such as the fire science program, into this building, into this location. So we look forward to not only selling an asset that the city has had and that MCC has been using, but also actually increasing the permanent, or not increasing, but creating a permanent presence of a significant program in the that is offered by MCC that will bring in several thousand people a year to study fire sciences at this location. So I think it's important in light of what seemingly was disappointing news. I look at this as in many ways a win-win, because the P20 will be able to thrive in the Fiesta District, where MCC is, of course, a central part. But also then we bring in a well-established and renowned program. I mean, this is about the only one in the state. And so people come from all over the state to study in the fire sciences program, both through ongoing studies, but also through specific programs that are given in service type training to fire professionals from around the state. So that's probably more than you wanted to know, but
no, they've been a great community partner, so it's good to be able to move forward with the project.
Good. Okay. Any other questions on? Yeah, Vice Mayor.
Just a comment clarifying the airspace, which is above the rest of the parking garage. It is not built out where they can expand on that fourth floor.
That is correct.
Just so everybody understands what it is we're talking about. Airspace doesn't mean a whole lot to folks. So that's to add on the top of the garage.
Thank you.
Councilmember Fenter?
Thank you, Mayor. Just a quick question. People will ask, the proceeds from this sale, have they been designated to go to a specific area yet, sir?
Mayor and Council, typically we have taken those dollars and put those reserves into the fund balance. In the past, we've always anticipated. This year, we didn't schedule any funding for capital for sale of land. Next year, we have about $10 million worth that were budgeted that we're still have to wait and see where that's going to come from. But certainly, there may be some opportunities to talk about these proceeds, and maybe as we continue our discussions on the budget, maybe we can talk about how this could assist. Remember, these are one-time dollars. So we'd have to look at some opportunities, but so we may want to have that discussion later.
Anything else? Yeah, I think it's important that we take, if we have assets, this is really a conversion. We had real estate we're converting to cash, and that it not go primarily for one-time uses, which cannot be restored, and also basically take an asset and turn into operations. We need to be very careful about doing that, and I think that runs counter to our overall philosophy of reallocating assets or repositioning assets to bring us the greatest value. So I look forward to that discussion going forward. Is that okay, Councilmember? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jardiniak.
You're welcome.
Anything else on page 5? Okay. Page 6.
Mayor and Council, if I may, on page 6, item 7A, that annexation case, we've continued to work with the applicant on that and have some ongoing items we're trying to resolve. So applicant has agreed to continuance on that to the January 12th meeting.
Okay, item 7A is continued to January 12th. Okay. Next item on the agenda is to hear presentation, discuss, and provide direction on budget issues related to the following departments: Parks, Recreation, and Commercial Facilities.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Council. I'd like to introduce Sue Deck, who's on my left. Sue is our budget and fiscal analyst for the Parks, Recreation, and Commercial Facilities Department. And on my right, I have Mike Holstey, who is our assistant director over recreation programs. And I'm Red Evans, the director of the department. Like many other businesses and cities and states throughout this country, this has been an extremely difficult year. And our department certainly has not been immune to the difficulties that we are faced in this new economy. The economic impacts due to this declining economy have led us to draft a new strategy, resulting in a more condensed model of operation. I would be remiss if I did not recognize the staff that I think represents this city so well, and in particular this department, for all of their efforts and for their enduring dedication that they have to those that we serve here in this city. They've done an excellent job of coming up with some new models and some new methods of providing these services to our citizens here in Mesa. From the very beginning of this process, we made a calculated decision to focus on our fixed assets. And so we put at our top of our list, in terms of our core focuses moving forward with this new budget, to protect and maintain our recreational assets, those being our parks and basins, as well as our amenity pools and our other facilities such as recreation centers and sporting complexes. Secondly, we focused on our programs, and in this, in order of preference, our youth, our teen, and our adult programs, which all include some aspect of our adaptive recreation. So what I will do now is walk you through these focuses and tell you a little bit about the programs and services that we'll be able to offer in these core groups. First, our parks and basins. While I mentioned this is our primary focus, these were certainly not immune to reductions. We are looking into prioritizing our parks maintenance based on use, looking at different levels as it relates to frequency of trash pickup, of tree trimming, of fertilizing, et cetera, to help streamline that operation and save some money and put some of those funds back into our heavily used parks and basins. We're looking at consolidating our market.
I'm sorry. I understand part of this. I understand trash removal on frequency, maybe tree trimming. How does mowing, does grass grow slower and less used, or how do you deal with that?
I'll go ahead and jump to a map here, Mayor.
Okay.
One of the things that we're looking at is some of our, you can see this represents our 2,600 parks and basins. 1,360 are developed, while we have 1,240 undeveloped. Those undeveloped parcels do not have turf in them now. They are barren or raw land. There's other basins that are represented with some darker tones out on the east side in particular, and a few on the west. But what we are looking at doing, and we're in the process of doing this, is identifying those basins that have low use. And while, yes, they do have sod in there, they do have turf, instead of mowing those particular basins two times a week or whatever the frequency rate is, those would be lowered. So, yes, the grass would be higher in some of those less used basins, and we're in the process of identifying which of those we would enact that model. Does that answer your question, Mayor?
It does. Thank you. Councilmember Higgins.
Excuse me. On that map, what are the dark brown squares? You have green, you have light green, and you have dark brown.
There are some basins that are either dirt or granite. They've been converted to granite or something of that nature, so they do not have turf in them. I think the last bullet point on this slide, moving back, would be that we are proposing that we continue our limited park ranger program to help protect those assets and to have a presence out there in these parks and basins to help work the registration and the Ramada system and providing that customer service to our folks that utilize these parks.
So I've talked. If you have limited park ranger, one of the trade-off is that you run the potential of perhaps having increased vandalism, misuse, those kind of things. What have you seen as you go forward, or as you've gone now? I don't know how long it's been since you've gone to the limited park ranger. Are we trading one cost for another cost, or we probably are to some degree, but if so, to what degree, and what do you propose?
Mayor, we are seeing an increase in vandalism and graffiti in our parks. Whether it's a component of not having park rangers in there or not, we can't draw that conclusion. We do feel, though, that having a presence in our parks does certainly help with four park rangers manning 24/7. They're spread out to where there's certainly some parks where the rangers never visit. And so, yes, we are experiencing increased vandalism and graffiti in our parks.
I'd really like us to watch that closely, because I think that are some things that seem like they're easy to cut. And this is especially when you get into public safety kind of thing. This is a public safety component with a park ranger, because they do have that presence there. And I think sometimes it's easy to rush to things without completely knowing the trade-off. And you're probably right. We probably don't have enough data so far to figure out whether that trade-off is there yet. But if you could track that and maybe report back to us and let us know, because if it's going to cost us the same to clean up vandalism it is to have park ranger, I'd just soon have a ranger there.
Right. But, and Mayor and Council, Brett, we're not proposing any further reductions in the ranger program. We're just going
to maintain
the
local.
Right. And I understand that, but I also understand that we went, how long has it been with the limited ranger program?
It's been decreasing for the last 3 years.
Yeah, okay. So we should be starting to build up enough data that we can really tell whether it's a payoff or not.
And Mayor, we have been tracking that, so at some future time we could bring that to you.
Councilmember Higgins?
As well as the graffiti, do you cross-reference like police calls in those parks?
Yeah, all of that is documented as well in terms of call-outs. And currently, if someone has an issue after hours when our offices are not open, they're calling the main, the dispatch line and sending a police officer out there or trying to contact one of us.
All right, thanks.
One note on this particular map. Just as an actual side note, we're tentatively scheduled in sometime in January, first of the year, to come back to you and discuss in some detail our Parks Master Plan, which will go into more depth about our strategies with these assets and where we're positioning ourselves for the future and in terms of service circles and providing this service to our citizens of Mesa. So that will be coming forward shortly. Our next focus is on our facilities, our aquatics facilities. We're proposing that we maintain and program our seven what we call regional or amenity pools, those being Carson, Brimhall, Fremont until Skyline would open, Keno, Shepherd, Stapley, and Taylor until our Rhodes pool would open. These regional pools, or these seven pools, would maintain their current level of operation, opening in May and going just a few days later into August. We would still do our swim lessons, public swim, competitive programs, year-round reservations, as well as maintaining access to our partner Mesa Public Schools and other user groups, whoever they might be. Our non-city sponsored programs, or our remaining pools, will no longer have any city-sponsored programs. We would simply secure and maintain those pools, those being Pal, Mesa Junior, Poston, Parkway, and as I mentioned, Taylor and Fremont at the time when Skyline and Rhodes were to open. These pools, however, we've been in discussion with Mesa Public Schools so that we would be able to allow their use if they wanted to go into there. We would work out what those maintenance charges would be, and we're in the process of discussing that with them.
Councilmember Finter.
Thank you, Mayor. It's interesting to note that the only two pools in District 2 will be the ones that we're looking at not having under a regional basis. But it's also important just that what you just said is there's an opportunity with Mesa Public Schools that they can maintain and keep those open. So there's access to the residents, at least in District 2. So I've had feedback about that, and there's some concerns.
And Councilmember Fenter, for clarification there, when we talk about Mesa Public School use, primarily they would not house programs that are open to the general public. Their use would primarily be for those students that are attending that school and would be during school hours is where their primary focus has been and will remain.
Yeah, and I guess to go back to some of the things that happened when we were having other discussions on pools, there's still going to be water at Mesa Junior. There's still going to be water at Poston. We're not going to show up one day and there's going to be sand in those pools or a planter box. What you're proposing is that these are joint ventures between the city and the school district. correct?
They are.
And the school district will continue to use all these pools as they normally use them as part of the educational program. What you are saying is that from the end of school through to the beginning of school, during the summer, you're proposing that we do not have at Powell and Poston these secondary pools, what we would be the swim availability during non-school hours. But we are not talking about shutting these pools down. What you're talking about is not staffing them during this non-school times. The school programs will be unaffected.
That is correct.
I want to make sure that I'm correct in my understanding on that.
Okay. That is correct.
All right.
Does that answer your question, Councilmember Finter?
Mayor, it does in effect, but again, the only two pools in District 2 will be closed to general public use. Same thing before. I do understand that. I'm just hoping that you think there's any effort by Mesa Public Schools to do any other activities or, not to dwell on this, but there's a lot of people in District 2 that are concerned about Poston and Taylor being closed. We're not talking about added amenities or anything. We're just talking about keeping the basic unit open. So, Mayor, that you may hear about that in the near future, but there is some concern.
I'm sure I will. And I would like to suggest that, once again, as we're talking about the availability, the pool will be there. It's not like we're going to let the pool go green during the summer. It will be maintained because, once again, we need it for the educational process. And I understand that well, why don't you explain a little bit the concept behind the regional pool basis, okay. Or perhaps you were already going to do that. Maybe Councilmember Richens, if you want to.
Well, I just had a quick question. Would it be appropriate at all, or is there a possibility, or I don't know if there's even any interest, to do some kind of RFP for a concessionaire that might want to operate these pools in the summer?
Certainly we'd be open to anybody who would want to, I guess, work with it. Actually, be with, because we're kind of a joint owner. I mean, we operate the pools that are on the school property. So certainly I think if we got with the school district and there was an interested party out there, we can do that. We already have the ability on a limited basis to rent out the pool facility. So it would just have to take on that liability of overseeing the...
And I think that's what we were getting to, is that even though these pools... For our purposes, we're not providing lifeguards and other things. They are still going to be there.
The pools are
and I'm sure
the
there are other solutions at the smaller pools who, and I'll let you explain to it. My guess is that the smaller pools are not bringing in or don't have the potential of bringing in the types of numbers that a regional pool does, which makes it more economically feasible to keep that open for us, for the city.
For example, if the YMCA wanted to lease a pool for
if someone else
program,
wanted to take on that obligation.
If there was a pool that they felt like they could operate and it worked for their purposes, absolutely we'd be willing to talk to them, sit down with them.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you. I have a question. With the Rhodes pool being closed, you indicated that the Taylor pool would be the one that would remain open and used until Rhodes closed. I had thought that Powell pool was going to be used until Rhodes closed. Has there been a change in that? Policy.
Mayor, Councilmember Kavanaugh, you are correct in the fact that it originally and at one point Powell Pool was going to be the alternative to Taylor. There's been some things with the boiler there to where they're actually Mesa Public Schools owns those boilers in the pools. They're going to be removing those out of Powell as well as, Mesa Junior. They'll be removing those boilers out of there, and those will be the new boilers that will be housed at Rhodes. So there's some construction things that are going on with that particular decision, and I think that was a primary reason why we had to switch. The other is just from a programming standpoint and a maintenance standpoint, Taylor is currently in better condition than Powell. And that is one point that I probably do need to make. All of these pools, Powell, Mesa Junior, Post, and Taylor, the ones that we were talking about here, one of the reasons why we moved away from them and went with the regional approach is because all of these regional pools are our newer pools and are have amenities and do not have the maintenance components that we're going to be having to probably put in there to fix these other pools. So Mesa Public Schools is aware that when something of serious nature goes down, we do not have the capital dollars to go in and replaster any of these pools. And so they are aware of that. It's just we're going to continue to open them for as long as we can.
Just a follow-up question, if I might. I know the Dobson High School swim team has been practicing at Powell with roads being closed. Does this mean they will have to move their practices to another location?
Well, roads is scheduled right now to be opened in August, so it should fall right in line with the Dobson swim practice.
For the season. For the season.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
And even if they didn't, it would happen during the school year, so that
if they didn't, I think Darla and her staff have already talked to Steve Hogan about some, either they would have to share a facility like at Keno temporarily until the roads pool.
Okay. Okay. Councilmember Summers?
Can you briefly give me an update as to the status of the funding for Skyline Pool and what the estimate is for construction?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, currently that project is in design. Mesa Public Schools is still committed to their portion of that pool. As you recall, they are putting up over half of the dollars for this particular pool. I don't have in front of me where that design and that the estimate is coming in at, but we can certainly come back and visit that project and give you a status update. But they are moving forward with it currently and have done some site work already in terms of just design.
What about what's the status of Mesa's portion of the funding? Do we already have that money available as part of the QOL?
Councilmember Summers, our portion of the Skyline funding is set aside as our capital reserve portion in quality of life funds.
Thank you.
And just so we know, because I know there's a lot of questions, okay, so it's set aside. Why don't we take that and put everything on hold and use that for operating costs? And I think, why wouldn't we do that?
Well, Mayor, we wouldn't. The proposal would not be to use it for operating costs. Again, it's a one-time reserve set aside for capital purposes.
Capital purposes, meaning to build things.
To build
so
things.
So you can't, it was set aside and restricted specifically to build things with.
Correct.
So to take it out and to cover an operating deficit runs counter to, first of all, the actions which specifically restricted its use to capital items. And we basically can't do that.
Okay. Right. And Mayor, the way the capital quality of life was set up is that the collections the first 10 years were at a higher rate, a half cent, correct? First 8 years, with the purpose of accumulating for that period of time the dollars for capital. Now all the capital projects were not completely completed or expended in that period of time, but they were specifically identified. So some projects were completed and then used up those funds that were accumulated during that first 8 years at that higher rate, and then 8 years into it, that rate then was reduced from a half cent to a quarter cent. So those dollars had to be accumulated, and they are in a reserve. Now, most of those capital dollars has been expended.
Correct.
But this is a project, for example, where the dollars have been collected some time ago, and now they're sitting
in previous
there.
Years. We're
previous
not using years. Current collected dollars Correct. To pay for capital projects.
Today, the dollars
those are items that were collected during that eight-year period.
Correct.
And were set aside because they were specifically collected for capital purposes in accordance with the quality of life tax, and they're sitting there waiting to be spent on these projects which you are now bringing to
right. So that the balance of what's being collected in quality of life really then continues to go forward with just for the operations side.
Right. I just want to make sure that we understand that, you know, because the big question with Councilmember Summers, well, gee, you know, we're facing this huge deficit. Why are we expending monies to build things when we need it for operating deficits? And there are some things that I would agree we should defer and reallocate and redirect. But these funds were collected and have been collected for a specific purpose in accordance with directions through a specific election, just so we understand that.
Okay. And Mayor, that this, as Rhett pointed out, this is leveraged against a 50% match by
Mesa
Public
Schools. Yeah, it's a true joint venture with the Mesa Schools, which is a little bit of a deviation from previous, where the school put up the property and we would build the pool. On this one, the school is putting up the property and is putting in 50% of the actual cost of constructing the pool. So this is a true joint venture with Mesa Public Schools.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right.
On a clarification on the Dobson High, Powell is still going to have the water in it. So right now they would use Powell until some time that if something happened there with either a repool decking or something along that line, then they'd have to go and share a facility. But right now, Dobson High is planning to use Powell Pool until Rhodes is actually open, and that's scheduled for August.
So to continue on with the pools, we have the what we call our service circle map. And as you can see, in the center of the city, with Powell, Parkway, and Taylor eventually being secured and maintained, and Poston, that there is some gap there. You'll see when we bring the master plan back that we have addressed that with Mesa Public Schools and have added in a service circle, and sticking with their new model to put it at high schools so that it would be centered at Mesa High and thus covering the entire city as we'd move forward in the future.
So just so we know, because I didn't understand, so you know, what you're saying is in the long-term plan, the idea is that eventually we'll replicate sort of what we're doing at Skyline, which is the first high school pool that's been built, and where we've always built at junior highs, we're now planning long-term once, if we get funding. At a future date, we would build a pool at Mesa High School.
Mesa High, which is...
Which is right there by that Parkway
right.
pool, which would be right smack dab in the middle of that unserviced area. And that is a part of your long-term plan.
Right, correct.
Yeah, none of those... That project is not identified in quality of life dollars.
Right, we understand that. And that's something you've been talking to Mesa Schools about, whereas my expectation would be we would try to replicate the Skyline deal where we would be a joint venture somehow so we could leverage it. Okay.
Next, our recreation centers are at city facilities. Our current model hosts recreation programs not only at these facilities but also at Mesa Public School sites. The new model will concentrate its programs to our city rec centers with a small portion remaining at city schools. So this is a shift in the way that we've done business in the past. Our current rec centers are Red Mountain, the Multi-Gen Center out east, as well as the Jefferson Recreation Center, Webster, Broadway Recreation Center, which is currently leased to the Mesa Association of Sports for the Disabled, and as well as our Washington Activity Center that is here in downtown and currently being funded by CDBG funds. The focus of these recreation centers will be on youth and teen fee-based activities. We'll be able to utilize a flexible staffing pool of seasonal and temporary employees at these facilities, and our hopes is to maximize capacity and participation levels and, again, concentrating recreation in these city-owned facilities. This map shows where those facilities are. Of course, the Broadway Recreation Center is our home to our adaptive program, which has a citywide focus. And Webster is on the west side of the city along with Washington Activity Center, while Red Mountain Multi-Gen Center and Jefferson are housed on the east side. I'd like to just walk you through in a little more detail what activities would be going on at these particular facilities. The Red Mountain Multi-Generational Center, for the most part, will remain intact with its current offerings. A few minor adjustments there. We'll be offering programs for the youth all the way up to seniors at that facility. Our Jefferson and Webster Recreation Centers, again, our primary focus there will be on the youth. We will be able to house a summer programs there from ages 4 through 8, or preschool, ages 4 through 5, all the way up to grades 7 and 8. We will be able to continue to do our after-school programs at Jefferson and Webster Rec Centers. And in the fall and spring breaks, we'll be able to do some camps and accommodate those kids in the first through the sixth grade.
Can I go back to the Red Mountain multi-generational? We have senior programs out there. I would assume that some of those programs are seasonal. Or are they all seasonal, or how does that work, and how much of that is focused on providing service to permanent residents or seasonal residents, or is there a differentiation, and how are those paid for?
Currently, Mayor, that facility is we have the East Valley Senior Services that is housed out of that facility, and they offer those programs. They lease the space from us and are able to offer those. We joint produce some of those things. But yes, they are seasonal. They charge their own fees and recoup that money. So I do not know what percentage of those are residents or non.
Okay. Councilmember Higgins.
On your summer youth programs, you know, you have preschool age 4 to 5. I'm concerned with the fact that we're cutting so many programs and that we're going to end up with, like, younger teens hanging around. So my question is, had you looked at shifting, like, money at that age 4 to 5 age group into, like, some older kid programs or older child, excuse me? And I don't know if that's true. That would just be my assumption looking at numbers.
And as we go further on here, Councilmember Higgins, we will have some programs that are going to be targeted to those teens. And at the end, I think we can come back and discuss that to see if the ratios are appropriate.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor.
Councilmember Richards.
I totally disagree. We need to shift away from the teens to kids my children's age, not of kids your children's age. Just got to keep it balanced.
Moving on to the Broadway Recreational Center, we will, at that particular facility, as I mentioned, continue to house our adaptive program. Our offerings from the City of Mesa will include cheerleading, basketball, floor hockey, and our social events titled TGIF, which is, thank goodness it's Friday. It's been an extremely popular program. We'll remain intact. And MASD will continue to do their wheelchair sports and rentals to outside groups.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
And I had a question about this TGIF when I was at an event last Friday night. Will that be moving to just once a month now versus weekly? Is that the change that is occurring?
Yes, it will be reduced from 4 times to down to one time a month. One time a month.
Right, because it is a very popular program for our residents who are developmentally disabled. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, and adaptive programming, can we maybe speak English a little bit for those of us who don't know that? Because you know, I look at this and I'm saying, my gosh, cheerleading, we have a huge thing. Why are we offering cheerleading and basketball and floor hockey classes?
Right.
Could you explain maybe a little bit as to why this has stayed on here?
Mayor Smith, the adaptive program basically includes those that have physical or mental disabilities. And this is an opportunity for them to participate in mainstream either sports and or cheerleading. I guess that's a sport now. But they're able to participate in these things as well as participate in some of these other social events, as Councilmember Kavanaugh alluded to with the TGIF program. So that is a brief definition of our adaptive program.
That's great. Thank you. Oh, Councilmember Higgins?
Are any of these programs, are they funded by, I know you don't have CDBG by them, but are they funded by federal grants or anything along those lines?
The programs that we offer under the title of City of Mesa, the cheerleading, basketball, floor hockey, those come out of are funded through our budget. MASD is a not-for-profit organization and does go after those types of grants to run their programs. So there is some grant money that comes in to help offset this particular program. Our Washington Activity Center that is downtown, again, focuses on the teen and youth recreation programs. It is currently funded by the CDBG grant through June of 2009, of which you're familiar with, at which time or from now until then, we are currently working on the RFP. And contingent upon the success of that or continued CBG funding, this facility would remain funded. And let me talk a little bit about the RFP and what we're doing there. We're working with the community members of that particular that surround that facility in drafting an RFP to have a private individual come in and possibly lease the facility for minimal dollars and in turn run and help underwrite the programs that are there. And that RFP is being written now and will be out on the street shortly. We have also turned in a new application for CDBG funding to continue that facility on for another year. Our other activities, and this is just a miscellaneous programs that do not will not be housed in one of those facilities, aforementioned facilities, but we do have additional adaptive programs for the physically and mentally challenged, such as our Camp Fiesta, which is a six-week summer camp that's held at a Mesa Public School site, along with various Special Olympic programs. We'll continue to remain partners with East Valley Special Olympics in hosting these events at our parks and other facilities, as well as some school sites. We would like to reinstitute our Rec and Roll program, which would be focused on the K through the sixth grade. This is a mobile recreation unit or units that can be dispatched to underserved areas. So the portions of the city where we do not have rec centers or we will not be housed at a school for a length of time, we can go into those underserved areas or those communities and provide recreation through this mobile unit, whether it be at a park or a school field.
Right. So, Mayor and Council, that our concern was when we looked at trying to maintain programs in the facilities that we own and controlled, it's obvious from the map that they're not evenly dispersed throughout the city. So we have a fairly large gap. So in order to create some flexibility in the program and to be able to reach out throughout that part of the city specifically, we're creating, they call it Rock and Roll. It's a mobile group that allow us to go out well advertised. Mike, talk a little bit about how you go about providing this program.
With the Rock and Roll, it's a self-contained trailer. It's completely stocked with crafts, games. Three or four staff go with that trailer every day. They go out to a park or a school site. They have organized sports activities. They have karaoke. They have a craft. They have just about anything that you would find at one of the rec centers. We actually take it out to the public, and usually it goes to three or four different sites each week, and we advertise it through flyers at the school that the children take home to their parents so that they know that, and that day we'll be there from after school, as soon as school ends, until approximately 4:30 or 5 o'clock. And the children are right there completely supervised. And we encourage the parents to come, too, if they want to participate and come with their children. And usually we get a very good turnouts at these sites.
Councilmember Summers.
Let's back them up a little bit here. Back on page 12, it says that you are, for the Washington Activity Center, looking to, you actually put out an RFP for somebody to run that facility. Have we considered that for our other facilities? And if not, why not? Why would this particular facility be special for that regard?
Mayor and Councilman Summers, if you recall, when we were going through the budget the prior year, this was one of the proposals that came up for continuing this, was this idea of going out and bringing in additional partners. So really, this is a continuation of that discussion and that dialogue. Because it is a very focused specifically where I think it's an identified area of service, that was, I think we continue that process now. We also needed to make sure that if that wasn't successful, we had a backup plan, and that's why the application process for CVG is upon us now, I believe. So we want to make sure we are covering both tracks, and we didn't leave this where it was unfunded at the end of the year. Now, if the question is, how can we, could we do this for other centers? Certainly we already have a kind of a model where we're sharing that at the Broadway Recreation Center. We could look at that for other centers, and maybe we'll find something out in the response we get from Washington Activity Center to determine whether there is enough of an interest out there by other nonprofits to take on these kind of engagements. We'd certainly be open to that idea.
Red Mountain has quite the variety of activities. It's probably our newest facility or one of the newest facilities that we have, and I would think that if we could find interest in Washington, that there, I would imagine there would be a lot of interest in the Red Mountain multi-generational facility as well.
The difference, Mayor, Councilmember Summers, is this. Today, the users of these facilities do so with no charge. The question is, how will a third party come in and be able to offer those programs without a fee? We suspect there will most likely be a nominal fee that will have to be charged for participants, and that's much different than what those community members have experienced to date. So but if that's a model the council wants to move towards, I'm sure that would be a lot more interest from other parties, like, you know, membership at the YMCA you know, to be able to participate in those programs.
And I'm certainly sensitive to that, but the fact remains, I think the model that I want to maintain is actually keeping these facilities open and viable. And if that means engaging in partnerships and having a nominal fee charged as a part of that, I think there would be more appreciation for our ability to maintain these services.
Correct. And there are, we stand correct, there are not all our activities are free. I mean, we obviously charge for after-school programs and things like that. So at still at the same point, and I think we'd be interested if there are other third parties out there that'd be interested. Maybe we need to start looking at that, see what options are.
I'd be interesting to see what happens with this RFP, and then from what we learned from that, maybe look at applying that
right
to some of the others. Sure. One at a time.
Councilmember Higgins.
I just wanted to clarify that I would say maybe most of the activities at Red Mountain Multi-Generational Center have fee-based. The climbing wall, the gym, the workout room, aerobics activities. So these things aren't.
No, you know,
aren't. Yeah. I just wanted to make
and
sure.
And I was specifically speaking about the WAC.
Oh.
The Washington Activity Center does not have those charges.
And one other point, Councilmember Summers, to your question, the Jefferson Rec Center as well as the Webster Rec Center are co-owned by Mesa Public Schools. So those were a joint venture to where they went in and built those facilities. So we would have and those are used during the school day up till 2:30, 3 o'clock by the school. And then we come in and program those from 3:30 on into the evening. So those are a unique facility. And as Chris mentioned, the Broadway Rec Center, we do have a managing partner in their MASD who we have leased that facility to. So we're really down to the Red Mountain Multi-Gen Center. That particular facility is large, and the operating budget there is quite extensive, more so than I think a lot more so than the Washington Activity Center, but we could certainly look at the RFP there and see if there's some things that we could do.
Yeah, I would like to do that, but after we've completed the Washington Center, we could talk about it for next.
And Rhett, if you could, I mean, this is a very basic observation or question, but the other day, I think it was Chief Gascon mentioned and expressed a concern with youth programs and cutbacks and things like that, and maybe you could explain a little bit what our philosophy, what your philosophy is, department's philosophy is, as far as youth activities and the benefits we get other than just, you know, if it's on paper here, we're talking about, wow, this is a really fun time, great time. Why are we doing this as a city when we're looking at substantial shortfalls? And could you maybe tie those two together, or is there a tie in there with how we're spending our money and our resources and as it relates to youth programs?
Most certainly. And first and foremost, I think in this economy where we have more and more adults that are having not only moms but dads and the whole family going out to try to make ends meet, we now have these children that are basically at school and are done at school at about 2:30 in the afternoon, and mom and dad aren't coming home till 6 and 7 o'clock at night. And I think what the chief is talking about is that the more time these kids have on their hands, the more time that they will find to either to become deviant or do other things that they probably shouldn't be doing. And we hope that that's not the case, but we know that that does happen. And so what we've tried to do is come in with that particular age group that is a little younger and is still needing some direction, and come in and provide something for them to do that can build some skills, whether that be working as a team, whether that be working on their academics, or doing whatever they can do to make them a better person and thus building a better Mesa. And I think that's where the tie is. What we do is help those individuals feel a part of the community and become a community member. And I think the programs that we're offering are certainly consolidated and condensed, but we're going to do our best to maximize capacities and to get as many kids as we possibly can handle in these facilities so that we can serve them.
So I'm by the way, thank you for the gratuitous reference to building a better Mesa. I appreciate that.
He got it.
Good. No, I guess you would buy into the fact that we're going to spend money one way or another, and obviously you've believed that we should spend it on the front end, and you're providing more than babysitting services, which is a common complaint that, okay, these kids are latchkey kids. Is that our problem as a city? And what I'm hearing what you say is, yeah, it is as a community. This is our challenge. because we're going to spend it one way or another, we'd certainly rather spend it in positive activities than we would on, and preventative activities than we would on the back end, where now we're incarcerating and we're putting people into the justice system having to spend more. So you'd buy into that, is what
absolutely.
I'm hearing. Okay.
A good summary. Thank you. Continuing on with our other activities, I think we were through the Rec and Roll program, and now I can talk a little bit about our summer youth development, our all-day camps, and then our sporting leagues, such as the Mesa Flag Football League, as well as the Girls Slow Pitch Softball League. We'll continue to do those at various park sites, which will, again will be a shift from away from the schools into our parks.
Vice Mayor?
Do we still have the girls' slow pitch? Is the program still maintained over Chester?
No.
Was fading. So where are we at on that program?
That program ended about 2 or 3 years ago, but it was so popular, that's one of the reasons we're trying to bring that back as an alternative to the Little League format. The girls' slow pitch is just a little bit less competitive and makes it more of a fun atmosphere.
So we're getting people in place to run that.
Yes, we have people in place that are going to run that, I believe, starting in March.
Okay.
Yes.
And the other thing that we're trying to do here is be equitable in terms of the flag football is primarily for the males or the boys, and obviously the girls' slow pitch will be for them. So we're able to offer sports to both of those areas.
Because we did make the move several years back to the adult leagues. Those are fully funded. They pay their own way, the entire cost. But we opted to still subsidize the youth programs to give them opportunity for things to do, keep them off the street.
Right.
Okay.
Rhett, how much the increased fees to cover lighting costs for school fields? I'm assuming that's for little leagues and things like that who basically use the school fields. We provide the lighting. We provide the electricity. How much are we looking at increasing that, and what impact do you think that'll have on these leagues, and what kind of feedback have you gotten from them?
We've had discussion with these leagues, and to go back in time just for a brief moment, this is part of the IGA, or the intergovernmental agreement that we have with Mesa Public Schools. Again, we entered into agreement to where after the school session or day is over, the Mesa Parks and Recreation Department steps up and starts scheduling those fields that are at all of the school sites. We, meaning the city of Mesa, went in and put light poles and lights into those fields. And so we do the scheduling of those, whether it be a Pop Warner team, a Little League team, or the like. That particular program, the fees were about $6 an hour to be able to turn on the lights for a team. We're going to have to double that to $12 an hour. We've had that discussion with various groups, and obviously, while no one wants a fee increase, they understand that this is something that we have to do, and we think it's important so that we'll be able to utilize all those assets in those fields and have more play time, especially in the summer.
And Brett, this actually was an idea that came
from one of those groups.
Now, one thing you brought up, an interesting point I was just thinking of, that map we had where we, all the acreage of the parks and everything, that does not include all the school. There's probably, what, double. So in other cities, those are not usually provided on school sites. In many of the other cities, the city itself develops that as part of a park. But in Mesa, because of our longstanding history of the intercooperation, cooperation with the school district, we have hundreds and hundreds of acres, if not thousands of acres, in Little League fields, ball fields, things like that, that are on school sites that actually are not counted in our acreage, park acreage. Okay.
And if I could interject on this one as well, and to go back to Councilmember Higgins' comment about teens, obviously this isn't, we don't run Little League programs as a city or Pop Warner programs, but I think we're instrumental in making those things work as we kind of referee, if you will, who gets what filled, and so that it's equitable for the different leagues and teams, and it's a chore. And so these are obviously centered around teens and their sporting events and so forth. So this is something that is definitely geared towards the teens that we're going to keep in place. We bypassed our adult sports, and you can see that is a reduce down to where we would simply just have offer softball as well as flag football for the adults. To speed this along, we will be centralizing our offices, closing or proposed to close the Decatur office out east. so that we would then have reservations and registration at our South Center campus, and then have our staff housed at those recreation centers, and again, more centralized and saving some department support funding.
Excuse me.
Go ahead, Councilmember.
Would that mean there would be someone at the, like, say, since the Decatur office is down the street from the Red Mountain someone would be there to handle that east side business?
Well, currently we do registrations at the east side Decatur office as well as our South Center campus office. Our proposal is to close the Decatur office and move those individuals so that they can do registration at the multi-gen center. Since we're already operating that facility, they can do two things at once in terms of registering people as well as greeting guests as they come in. So we're being a little more efficient there in consolidating that operation. So we would still have some reservations. It would just be up the road a few miles to the multi-gen center. The one issue that we want to bring up here, I know you're all familiar with the timeout publication. This is has been around for quite some time and allows parents and the users to know what classes are being offered, to register, and so forth. Our proposal is to phase this out of printing, out of circulation, and move towards more of an online measure as well as a phone. These are currently in place. You can currently register online, you can currently call in, or you can currently go in person and register at those two offices that I just mentioned. This is something that obviously costs a lot of money to produce this and to mail it out, and we're hopeful that we'll be a little bit more environmentally sound by not doing such, and hopefully be able to help people through this process. We think we have other options for them. To go into our commercial facilities quickly, our golf course operation, both hey, Riverview and
Councilmember Summers, I think, had a question.
I was just trying to figure out how we disseminate that to folks who are used to getting it in the mail. Can we work with Mesa Public Schools and plus our libraries, see if we can get an easy link on preferably on the front page, so that whether you go to the library or to the kids' websites, to their SNAP grades, they can get that online, and maybe they can email it out. So as we transition from print to online, we make sure we hit as many people as possible.
Great suggestion. We'll certainly do that. In the brochure that will be coming out January 9th for our spring session, it'll still they'll have information in there in terms of this process and educating participants on how we'll be phasing out of this. It's not something that we're going to do today. We'll still have another brochure, a publication going out for our spring. This will take effect in the summer.
I know we've had meetings recently with Mesa Public Schools, hope to have them with Gilbert, to cover that area of the city also. And I think there's a lot of areas where we can cross utilize our resources, and certainly if we want to get in touch with youth, they are more than willing to work with us as far as co-branding or utilizing each other's resources to approach people and contact people. So I would really reach out to the MPS and see what resources we can piggyback on and do that. Okay. Councilman Richens.
In that light as well, just saying that we have 2,600 acres of available parkland, as you know, Councilmember Fincher and the mayor pointed out, is there any way that we can get a full understanding of how many fields we have under programming, you know, including the school sites and all the various things, so we can get an understanding of the whole scope of what you guys have to offer? Because I don't think we have a fully clear picture of what you're trying to take on with the budget that you have.
Absolutely, and I think when we address the master plan, we could insert that map of the school facilities into that as well, and have that discussion.
Try and include an acreage. I know that may be difficult, okay. But you know, you can figure out acre here and acre there. Yeah,
sure.
Thank you.
Commercial facilities. We have three of our four facilities represented here on this slide: golf, convention center, stadium, and our Fitch Park. Our Riverview and Dobson Ranch golf courses, the number of rounds that are being played shows a slight downward trend. However, we've made some minor adjustments with some fees, and we think that that facility or those facilities will again remain profitable and in the black. However, to ensure that this happens, we are looking and exploring options to lower maintenance costs at that facility as well as the convention center and amphitheater. Our stadium and Fitch Park We are looking into the possibility of contracting the outside maintenance, and why outside maintenance outside the stadium wall or the Fitch Park wall, and putting that into our park system so that those contractors could maintain those while they're doing other areas of the city or our park system. We have, and I'll, while I have the floor here, make a quick plug for spring training. We were able to receive 19 games this year. Typically, we receive about 16. And so we think that that will be an increased revenue. In fact, we know that we'll have some increased revenue there, as there is a lot of buzz about this season. February 5th, it kicks off with the Los Angeles Dodgers, and tickets will be going on sale January 6th. So hurry and get your tickets. They'll be selling out quickly. And then we've also, as you are aware, restructured the debt service on the facility, saving some money there to the bottom line. So now, in summary and to conclude, we'll walk you through what all of this means from a financial impact standpoint as well as a staffing and FTE standpoint. The spreadsheet that you see before you has our various programs that are offered within the department, from our commercial operations to our parks, recreation, and aquatics. Our adopted budget for 08-09 was roughly $34 million. We had estimated revenue of about $12.8 million to come into the city. Thus, in the next right column, 08-09 city funding, you see basically what is the city subsidy or what we need to have to operate these programs, $21.7. The next column is what we have reduced, or our savings or reductions for 08-09. You can see that it totals $3.2 million. And we can, or will be, including some more and additional vacancy savings for about another $700,000 for a year-end total of about $4 million for 08-09. In 9-10, a full year's of savings will be estimated at about $4.8 million, or 22.3% reduction. Some areas, as you can see, recreation is at a 63.4% reduction, and our department support came in a second with 25% reduction in that area, from administration all the way through our support services. When we look at
As I'm adding these up, so we're at about $8.2 million over the next 18 months then, are your proposed budget cuts.
When we look at staffing reductions, in 08-09 we had 247.7 FTEs. The reduction would put us at 191.4, for a total reduction of 56.3, or 22.7%. And again, you can see the highest percentages are under recreation and admin support, which matches the dollar reductions on the earlier page. What does this, all this mean in terms of programs and participants?
Rhett, Councilmember Summers had a question.
Rhett, maybe Chris. I'm looking at the fiscal impact for the convention center amphitheater.
It's maybe from CVB on what the sales tax revenue are from sales secondary to the operation of those facilities. Have we ever done a study like that?
Oh, for the our convention center?
Yeah,
now,
people using convention center, what are they generating, estimated,
you know,
in revenue?
Looked at it kind of peripherally. You know, most of the, and Brett can correct me, majority of the users of the convention center and amphitheater are most likely going to be drive-in users that come from the region. There are once an occasion that we will have those who will spend a night, most likely next door, but most of our as a regional groups that coming in. Is that fair, Rhett, to say that?
Yeah, I think that has been the historical trend. However, within the last year and a half or so, 2 years, I think with the when the Marriott came in, we put a strong emphasis on going after association and regional business to where we could generate some more hotel rooms. But primarily, and with the economy the way it is, Chris is correct in saying that, you know, the majority of those are driving in. However, they are obviously still buying food in downtown and doing some different things around that facility. And I know the Bureau has done some studies in the past. I don't know how updated they are, so we can look into to those numbers and share those with you.
Could we please, because I mean we're looking at, especially given what was said about these folks are typically regional, not traveling in from anywhere else, it's city funding of $615,784.
Correct. But the CVB today contributes
$200,000
a year that goes towards the convention center. Typically use those for capital projects, though. We treat them as such, I think, as opposed to budgeting of operating. So it'll replace carpet or mechanical, electrical, those ones I can remember recently. So we do receive $200,000 a year that we use for capital improvements. You're looking at the operating side, I believe, here, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's still $615,000.
No, I understand. I'm just, if it weren't for the $200,000, there would be more coming from the city to pay for those other expenses.
And at some time in the future, these facilities, even if they bring people in from a regional basis, as you said, they generate economic activity here. Certainly our spring training activity isn't limited to February and March, as the Cubs and others have actually year-round operations, both at Fitch Park, mainly at Fitch Park, I would guess. At some point in time, I'd like some information as to what those are, without all the fancy multiplier effects that I don't trust and nobody else trusts. But we're putting money out in some of these facilities, and I think the idea is that we're generating economic activity, and I've never really seen information that makes sense other than general information that seems like a lot of hype. I know it's real. I know it's out there. I'd just like to know what that is.
Sure. And lastly, and to conclude, on the last sheet of your PowerPoint presentation, shows the number of recreation programs as well as aquatic programs that were offered in 2008, 5,600 roughly. And with these reductions and with this new model, we will be offering 4,650 programs. So that will be a difference in terms of participation. The best that we can calculate would be about 53,000 people difference from the number of participants that we had in 2008 to 2009. And so our challenge certainly is to find ways to reach out to those individuals, to get them into our parks, to figure out ways that they can participate and do some things that traditionally they might have been unaware of. And so that's our challenge. It certainly will move forward. I think we have some great facilities and some great offerings still in place, and we encourage those folks to register and to call us if they need any help with that.
And Mayor Rhett, these numbers don't necessarily mean these are separate individuals. These are just the participants in a specific program. Individuals could be in multiple programs during the year, get counted more than once. So I want to be clear with that. This doesn't necessarily represent 53 distinct individuals. It just means participants in a specific program.
Yes, there could be an, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Now we'll hear from Arts and Culture.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. I think everybody's got their handout, so I'll just start. This is going to be a presentation that I'll do on behalf of the whole Arts and Culture Department, which includes the Mesa Art Center, the Arizona Museum for Youth, and the Arizona Museum of Natural History. My colleagues representing those institutions are here, so if we do have questions that I can't cover, they will certainly be happy to come up and help you with answers. Firstly, I'd like to just say, as Red did at the beginning, this is clearly a tough challenge for all of us, and I want to just pay tribute to my staff who are handling this situation really well and thank them for going through this really difficult time in the positive way that they have. It's not over yet. They still have a lot of changes to get used to and new solutions to figure out, and I just want to pay tribute to their resilience in this time and their creative thinking. They've done a great job during this time, and I have no doubt that will continue. I've started out by just articulating very briefly who we are and what we do and how we think about ourselves in the city. So just to articulate again our overall arts and culture vision, or at least as we put it, our quest is to engage, entertain, educate everybody. For us, the most important word is the last word, everybody. We really see ourselves as a community arts center that is paid for by the community and therefore owned by the community. And so we need to work hard constantly to know who our stakeholders and our owners are and be sure that we serve them and that they feel that they are celebrated and welcomed and that there's some sense of relevance and affinity that they can find with what we do and that they feel engaged, entertained, and educated through the year. Moving on to slide 3, some of the values that we feel we offer articulates again our sense of priority. We believe strongly that we are family oriented and offer a safe environment for family to do the kinds of things that we all dream family should be doing together. And we think we offer those opportunities in a great way. We offer great value for money. This certainly is the place that families are beginning to use as the gathering place where they develop a sense of place and where they enjoy the idea of being in Mesa and able to gather in the great facilities and environments that we create through the facilities and the programs we do. We basically are Mesa's town square in a way, and proud of it and enjoy that position that we hold. We offer a breadth and accessible and diverse series of cultural experiences where we hope everybody of all communities will feel empowered. It's very important for us that every community feel that they have a relationship with what we do because they all pay tax and therefore have a legitimate right to expect to be represented. The programs that we offer, I believe, are excellent. We make sure that whatever we offer is always of the best that's available. We test what we do against national and international models. And I think that many of you have seen, and I think our citizens know, they can always come to our facilities for really creative and excellent programming that is both excellent and relevant. The economic impact opportunities we offer are varied. There are not many number of examples. It makes us distinctive in the Valley. There are things that we offer that nobody else can because of the way that we come together as a holistic package of arts and culture. It gives us a competitive advantage, which I think we are benefiting from. Folks are coming to our campus and our facilities for more than just one experience. It's for a range of experiences, which includes great shows or museums or so on, but it also includes the ability to go and get packages like see a show and have dinner in one of the local restaurants. And so those are opportunities that we're leveraging wherever we can, and I'll talk a little bit more about that as we move on. Slide 4 covers some of the challenges we have to face on an ongoing basis, and specifically during this difficult time. Of course, it's no different. Perceptions is the name of the game in our neck of the woods. In a way, we kind of reflect what people think of Mesa, and sometimes that's positive, sometimes that's not, and that's how they would feel about the arts, because we represent what people think, how they live, how they dream. We are the culture of this community, and therefore the lightning rod for much of what people think about their own community. So the solution to that is to constantly communicate, and we do that wherever we can. We do that through a lot of advocates. We have great support from many volunteer board members in all three institutions who are great advocates and ambassadors for what we do. And we have many students and ex-students who are ambassadors who say, I've been through a program and it shaped me and made me who I am. And that's a way to make sure that people feel proud of Mesa and proud of what this city offers. We know that we need to earn social capital, make sure that if the time comes when any of our offerings are up for grabs, that there will be people who say, wait a minute, don't touch that. It's relevant to me. It means something to me. I've benefited from it. There's a reason that I want to defend it, not just simply because it sounds right, but it really means something to me. We know we have to earn that. You don't just get that. And we don't take it for granted. And that we get that from relevance, being relevance, but also being able to measure our relevance and the impact that we have. And we measure that in a number of ways, and I'll show you some of them now. Access is a big deal for us, especially in the new Mesa Arts Center. A wonderful new facility was opened, and immediately the perception was possible that it's now an exclusive place, a place that only some people can afford to attend, because we had to charge fees related to the costs of running this new facility as opposed to the old facility. We're addressing that in a number of ways, constantly, making sure that people feel they're welcome and that everybody's in and nobody is out. It's something we feel strongly about, and we've been very successful in a number of ways with the help of the private sector to lower the access threshold in a number of ways. I'll highlight some of that in a minute. And then, of course, the challenge of being financially sustainable, which for us simply means being less and less reliant on the general fund as time goes on. I don't think there's a holy grail that says when we pass the 50% mark, we've reached it. It's a constant effort to make sure that the dollars that we use that are public dollars are really necessary and that there's no other way to fund our activities. But certainly is a constant priority for us. Moving on to the next slide, I've articulated just some of our performance measures for the year 06-07 and 07-08 before we go into the current year. Those were two, shall we just say, normal, in inverted comma, years before any extraordinary financial thing happened, externally at least. And both in revenue and participation, the Arts and Culture Department performed 10% better year on year. As you can see in 06-07, which is the blue line in the revenue graph, we brought in a total of $5.2 million into the city coffers through our activities at the museums and the Mesa Arts Center. This is earned and contributed revenue, by the way. And then last year, $5.8 million, which is a significant increase during a not-so-buoyant year. And that is due to great programming, great staff, great marketing, and great support from the city. And back to the perception issue. I think there is a perception that this is these activities are value for money. And then in participation, same thing. The participation increased over those 2 years from $400,000 to $440,000. Again, about a 10% increase. Just want to stop and make sure that we see the significance of these numbers. I don't think there are many people that realize that the Arts and Culture Departments bring in 400,000 people every year into downtown Mesa, which has all sorts of other benefits as well, obviously, economic spin-offs, as you mentioned with Red's presentation as well. Significant numbers, good performance year on year. But then we get to this year, which is slide six. And the story changes a little bit. We're 4 months into the year, so we're only a third through. But the blue and the red represent the years we've just covered. And again, you can see the trending over those 2 years with a 10% increase, which we've just covered. The month-to-month fluctuation isn't too much to go by. It really does depend on the programming. It depends where the blockbusters are. So we could have a blockbuster in March this month, this year, and next year the blockbuster is in August. So the peaks and valleys are not to be taken too seriously. But the annual trend is something we look at. And the green line at this stage is trending about 10-15% lower overall. The Arizona Museum for Natural History is doing really well. It's doing much better than last year. They're maintaining about a 10-15% improvement over last year despite everything. Clearly perceived as strong value for money during tough times. We all know, and this is an international phenomenon, during tough times people need to escape, and they find places to escape to that they perceive to be good value for money as families. The Natural History Museum currently seems to have that market. Arizona Museum of Youth, I beg your pardon, is about the same as last year, which is they're holding their own, which is really good performance given the economy. And they've got some programs that they are introducing that will obviously be good for them for this year. But I think where the achievement is of holding their own against last year is that they don't have the blockbuster of the Henson this year that they had last year. So to just be on par with last year is already really good. But the Mesa Arts Center, especially the box office, is seeing what everybody else in that industry is seeing nationwide, and in fact internationally. My colleagues tell me the same thing, a 15% to 20% drop at box office. People really are thinking 2, 3, 4 times before they buy those kinds of tickets. Obviously the value of that experience is higher than the value of going to a museum in terms of dollars, and that makes a difference in families' budgets at this time. So that trend of a slight slower start of the year is something we're looking at very carefully, so the rest of our presentation covers that. Some of the new initiatives that we launched over the last year and will initiate in the coming months, the blockbuster approach has been possible basically because the city has shared this vision and has been extremely supportive for this business model. The Henson, the Feather Dinosaurs, the Mars exhibits were great examples where the city said, we will go into partnership and front fund these exhibits the year or two before they come, because they come from China, they come from Washington, and they need huge deposits and financial commitments long before the budget year in which they will appear in our museums and so on. And the city has agreed to support these business plans, and we've yielded the fruits of those. Both the Henson and the Feather Dinosaurs have achieved their budget targets and actually did better. So they were good investments for the city, and the city was able to offer great exhibits to its citizens, which otherwise would not have been possible. This is a model we'll continue to do. The Free Sundays is an example of what we do to increase access, which I mentioned earlier as a real challenge for us. Target is sponsoring the three for free, first Sundays free in the three museums. It isn't always possible to lower our fees, but we can have lower fees through a sponsorship. And that's what we do in a number of other cases on a one-to-one basis, but this is a great initiative and an example of how we can make access more affordable. A dinner and a show, I mentioned earlier, last year about 150 dinner and show packages were sold in the first season. I think this year we're doing better. I don't have the final number. Simply put, people can buy tickets for a show and get a dinner thrown in for the package, and they go to the restaurant and they're ready, and people are ready to get them in and out on time. Many of the restaurants in this area benefit from it. Clearly, that is a good thing for them. It's a good thing for us. It's a win-win, and it does directly impact through our arts and culture activities on the economy of the downtown merchants. I'm not going to talk about all these points, but just community events is something, again, that flows out of our everybody in, nobody out, and the everybody word I emphasized earlier. We do many of these community events to celebrate many of the communities and their cultural significant days that they would like to celebrate. Day of the Dead is one of them. It's the third year we've done it. It was very successful this year. Our count is about 9,000 people. Their count is about 15,000. I guess it's somewhere in the middle. It was a very busy weekend, very successful weekend. The community that celebrated the Day of the Dead are really happy with the fact that they were able to get us to do this for them, and they're very happy with the way it came out. The Holiday Arts Festival has grown, and we're past the break-even point. We're making a modest surplus this year, and we think we can grow that model to become an income generator. MacFest is another example of the Mesa Arts Center reaching out and saying, let's do more than just our own thing. So for the past 3 months now, since October launch, we've seen Saturdays, every Saturday in town, with visitors in downtown between 3,000 and 5,000 on a regular basis, as opposed to probably more like 3,500 before MacFest on every Saturday. And many, many merchants used to be closed. They're now open. Restaurants are serving food every single Saturday. People are sitting outside. So there's economic activity as well as artistic activity. just another initiative that shows how serious we are to be an economic citizen as well as an artistic. We are embarking on a number of partnerships. A new one now is with the PD. We're beginning to talk to them and with them to collaborate with them to do more work in some of the at-risk areas that both of us work in. And the last one I'll mention, because shared resources is a slide all by itself later, is the Shop Mesa for Fun is a new initiative which we're about to launch. The idea is that people who come to us with receipts for purchases in the city of Mesa that attract sales tax will get a percentage discount for a voucher towards arts and culture product, and we're working out exactly what that might be. We have inventory we can make available. There are empty seats in some of our theaters. We can certainly offer some museum experiences for this. And it's just to, as I say, add an element of culture to this picture of wanting people to spend their money in Mesa. And we think it'll be a positive thing. Slide 8 gets to the nitty-gritty of the funding and the numbers. I'm sorry it's this late in the day, but we've got to look at this now. The funding sources for direct, just to clarify, our indirect sources for indirect expenditures are not on this slide. This is really apples and apples from here on with every piece of other financial information you'll receive. It's all about direct expenses only. The 08-09 budget is before you on slide 8, and the totals simply says that we get about $3 million in general fund for arts and culture. We get about $4.6 million for quality of life. We earn about $4.4 million through our activities, and we have about $1.5 million contributed through the private sector and the various boards, our foundations and friends that make a significant impact and a great partnership with us, and we appreciate their work. And we really depend on them to continue to support much of our programming, as you can see, in a very big way. So our total budget in terms of directs, $13.6 million, of which 56% comes from the city of Mesa, and we earn or have contributed 44% of it, which is the budget for this year. The next slide starts beginning to deal with the budget reduction. We were given a target of 30% to cut out of our operations and programs going forward. This is clearly a very big target, a huge challenge, a dramatic target, and a dramatic cut, especially for the two museums who were cut 50% each less than 3 years ago, which represents a 65% total budget reduction for them in the past 3 years. Very dramatic, even traumatic in many cases, as you can imagine. It's to their credit that they've not only survived but flourished in the last 3 years by doing more with less and huge creativity and initiative. But this was our target. And so this is how we handled it. This slide on page 9 articulates the budget for each, 10.7 for MAC, 1.7 for natural history, and 1.3 for AME. We then deducted the revenue, which is earned and contributed revenue, which I shared earlier, which gives us the city contribution net, which is 5.7, 1.1, and 864,000. And we cut that by 30% so that the contribution from the city would be reduced by 30%. And the numbers in the boxed area on the far right gives the dollar numbers we had to cut out of the budgets, 1.7, 330, and $260,000. I'm steaming ahead, so if there are no questions, I...
Councilmember Summers has a question.
Okay.
I'm trying to follow this slide along here from
Page
budget.
9?
Perhaps 8 and 9 we can look
okay.
at both. But looking at 9 quickly, it says there's a 30 where the city has requested 30% reduction for the MAC alone. Just
for the Arts
at the
and
MAC.
Culture Department, yeah.
$1.7 million is what 30% reduction is. And when
right.
I look back at slide 8,
mm-hmm.
Where does that money come from? Is that a reduction out of the general fund and quality of life funding? So essentially we're eliminating all general fund monies from the MAC and a portion of the QOL.
If you'll see how he did his chart on slide 9, he carries over the final column from slide 8, and then he backs
right.
out of the total budget for each one of
revenue.
The he backs out from there both the earned income and the contributed.
Right.
So all you're left with is the city's contribution,
yeah.
which really is defined as general fund and quality of life dollars. And then he's taking 30% reduction of those two. Mm-hmm. And that becomes his target
right.
of what he actually reduces by.
Right. Okay. And as to a direct answer, where it comes from, it depends how we cut. Some of the staff are funded by one fund and some of the activities by another. That's how it ended up being paid for.
Okay. And the quality of life election said that was, if somebody could remind me, that was to build and operate. It was also
yes.
to operate.
Right.
So if we consider that the QOL money was to build and operate in the general fund, we're essentially eliminating the general fund subsidy.
Reduce.
Well, it's almost eliminating. It's 1.493 million, and the cut is 1.7.
Oh, if you, right. Well, if you.
You could also say you're eliminating 1.7 million out of the QOL, but.
Combined is how we're looking at it, yes.
Yeah.
I like my way.
I'm not sure whichever way I like. I like nothing.
I know you don't like either way.
Slide 14, I think you'll choose, show which way you like.
Yeah.
I don't think it's possible for me to answer so clearly that it's out of this or that fund. I think it is combined. It's a bit of both. It depends where the cuts happen.
I understand. Maybe it's semantics, but if anybody.
It's the equivalent to.
Right. It's equivalent to the general fund money.
Total general fund.
Right.
Plus. More, actually.
Right.
Yeah, well, right.
About 200,000.
And I think it, I mean, we're talking accounting here, and we're talking where it goes here and there, which is important, which maybe isn't important as the money all comes in, but I think it's important from a philosophical standpoint, because this is obviously, the Arts Center is obviously a hot topic, and it's one that in good times raises a lot of emotion and tension for many people. We had an election. That election, regardless of how people think about it, and I've heard all sorts of different opinions, we had an election. And that election was passed by the citizens of Mesa. And from that election, one of the very specific line items in that election was that we would build and operate an arts center.
Right.
And so I think from a philosophical standpoint, it does make a difference, because I believe that we have an obligation based on the specific instructions in that election to build and operate. And so if we can reduce funding, and if we that does come from the concept that it's out of our general fund, I think the quality of life as it goes on is consistent with what the voters voted on years ago. So I know that from an accounting standpoint, maybe it really doesn't matter because the money all comes in, it's collected, it goes into a big pot. But I think that as we look at how we fund these operations, it is important to us, and I know it's important to me and others I think I've talked to, it's important because I do believe that as the quality of life as a concept and as an ongoing obligation goes forward, that there is that sort of obligation. And our goal is to reduce other general fund type of discretionary, I guess you might say. I don't know if that's an accurate, but I look at it as being more of a discretionary kind of funding. So the more we can take off of the general fund or discretionary and put those to other areas, I think that it bodes well for how we're operating that. So I guess I don't know if that's...
And Mayor,
that's
really
that's
where this presentation's heading too, and it's a philosophical discussion that we probably need the council to weigh in. I mean, I'd say 2 years ago, the percentage of the general fund to quality of life as a percentage of the overall budget was much higher than even this 56% that you're seeing here today because of the aggressive marketing and getting programs. And we saw at the beginning how much the additional revenues that are coming in from year to year are important, because what that does is that allows there to be more programming activity and it begins to cover a larger portion of the budget. And what you're going to see later on is we wanted to identify this percentage here where the greater percentage of the overall budget is coming from quality of life and general fund. By the time we're done with this presentation, you will see for the first time that means that the general fund and quality of life is providing for less than half of the total funding in these centers. That's significant. We weren't even close to
that. I think
that's
a significant trend. And I think we have, the way we look at it, we have some discretionary, we have some what I believe are obligatory type of commitments to the art center, and I think it's essential that we trend that way, and I think it's great that we do. Councilmember Summers, you had a comment?
I did, and it speaks to a question I had asked in a previous presentation, and you had touched on it a moment ago. I would also like to see and I don't think we've done this study on the ancillary effects of operating the Art Center and how much revenue that's bringing in for sales tax revenue. I know it's difficult to calculate, but in this particular case, I think there might be some direct numbers we can look at, because there are businesses that have hours of operation that are beyond what they normally would do because of the activities of the Art Center. And I think that's an important piece of the conversation. When we're talking about this particular topic, we should be talking about what is it doing for the downtown Mesa area. So I would like to see, perhaps in concert with the CVB, get some
maybe
numbers.
There's a survey that we could have the CVB help actually with, fund to go and do the surveys during the year, because different events are going to have different impacts.
Or the chamber.
One of the two, to fund that study for the arts and then over at the convention center and amphitheater.
Well, and also, it gives us a basis. I mean, I think one of my disappointments is that we have two separate presentations here. Parks and Rec, where we talk about spring training. We talk about these great assets we have in downtown. I don't recall any specific activities where we have cross-pollinate those two activities, where we have 12 to 15,000 people coming into our city at a minimum 19 times during the month of March. A mile and a half away, we have this tremendous activity tremendous asset called Downtown Mesa, which is up and coming and has a lot of good things going on. And after a spring training game, we make everyone turn right. And, I think that's something that has baffled me as to why we literally chase people out of the city and we don't take advantage of those kind of assets that should be complementary, and we should work on ways to bring people together, and we really haven't done it, that can have a direct economic benefit.
Make everybody turn left.
Make everyone turn left. Thank you, Vice Mayor. It's simple. We have a solution. Well, Councilmember Richens.
It's the same thing with the Art Center. We put a big parking garage on the east side of the Art Center so everybody can drive in, park there, and not go to downtown. Maybe we should consider revamping that parking garage so everybody parks behind the businesses so they have to come through downtown to get to the Art Center.
Well, I think you're headed in the right direction as far as really getting understanding that this stuff all fits together. But there's something I would personally like to see where we can have some event, especially for a Saturday or Sunday spring training game, where we bring people in before the game. If they start about 1 o'clock, we bring people in before, shuttle services, things like that, or we get people to stay afterwards, have events, and it's a long day, but I see that happening. And I saw that last year when I was in Scottsdale, and after a Giants game, for example, downtown Scottsdale, you cannot get a parking spot or get a restaurant because people come out of that the Scottsdale Stadium there on Osborne, and they walk into that into Old Town Scottsdale and they hang around for a long time. It's not quite as easy for us, but I think we can be looking at ways to look at those. I'm sorry, I've gone on too long.
I just wanted to finish my comment that according to the Parks and Rec presentation we just heard, Hohokam Stadium doesn't even recover half of its expense, but the Art Center is. So I just wanted to commend you guys for doing that. There are facilities that we don't expect full cost recovery out of. I don't see anybody really harping on the Hohokam Stadium that hard as much as we have on the Art Center, but I want to commend you for that. The one concern I've always had about how quickly they expected full cost recovery out of the Art Center was it never had time to build a great reputation and a great constituency. So you guys got dealt a blow, I think, at the beginning. And to recover as far as you have is, a tremendous compliment to your management personally, Johan, and the rest of the people involved in your department have done a wonderful job. And I just want to publicly thank you and commend you for the job you've done. Thanks.
And I think we sort of jumped ahead of where you are in your presentation, so I'll let you go back to slide 9, go on to slide 10 then, I guess.
Yes, I want to thank the city manager for stealing my thunder. I have no idea what I'm going to do for a grand finale now. Thanks for that. Thank you. Publicly, I want to thank you, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, spoken as a true artist, he needs a grand finale. All right, we'll applaud. We'll stand up.
Keep your day job.
Everyone got their Bic lighters available. If at the end, please, let's write them all up.
Yeah, Mayor, just coming back to slide 9, and I know we focused a bit on the Mesa Arts Center, but I do just want to emphasize again what I said, and I don't know if there's a solution in this room today, but I do think the two museums are particularly hard hit on the back of a cut 2 years ago. 65% cut in those operations is dramatic. Some might even say impossible to handle. Those teams will not say impossible. I know they won't, and they'll make it work. But I just don't want to divert the focus too much to the Mesa Arts Center in the light of such dramatic occurrences in their history. It's a serious challenge for them to deal with. And they've worked out plans, and I'm pretty sure they'll deliver on the plans. But if there's any way we could find a way to make their burden a little lighter, I think we should put our heads together to do that. They're certainly feeling much more pain this time than I think they should. Moving on to slide 10, then, our reduction strategy, when we got the good news of the target, we had to work out a strategy about how to do this. Obviously, I think the first thing for us was to redefine and retain our core, figure out what we do best, and make sure that at the other end of this, we still do that and are still able to do that. High priority for us was to minimize job losses. I know that everybody had that as a priority. But for us, we cannot offer the services we do without the great staff we have. And that's the last place we looked to find the reduction. We obviously focused on fiscal efficiencies. I don't need to say that. I guess everybody does. But we really found every possible way to cut costs and increase revenues, and that's part of our plan. The last two, I guess, link leverage economy of scale. And again, I'll talk about the shared resource idea later on. We really are operating as one department, not as three silos anymore. We started that 18 months ago. It's much more of a reality now. We have a number of those collaborative kind of non-silo disciplines that are already working really well over the past year or so. Thank you. It will continue to do more of that. And we wanted to be sure that we end up on the other side of this when the sun comes up again with viable and continue to be extraordinary facilities and services that we offer that everybody can be proud of, and that's growable again, that we haven't damaged it to the extent that we can never rebuild it. So that's what kind of drove our reduction exercise. The impact of the reduction clearly is dramatic. I said that already, and if I say it again, forgive me. Apart from cutting operation and program budgets by about $1.5 million on an annual basis, we will be reducing our staff to approximately 19 positions or 17 FTEs, and that's approximate because it really depends how you look at it. But that's more or less the numbers, and that cuts about $900,000 out of an annualized budget. The FTEs are about 10 at the MAC, 4 at the Natural History, and 3 at AMI. We will be reducing the number of exhibitions and the number of programs we do in wherever we think it's necessary. An example, this would be at both the Museum of Youth and the Mesa Contemporary Arts, for instance. We will not be able to do our exhibition turnover as frequently as we used to do. We'll have fewer exhibitions per year, but because it keeps turning over, there will always be a fresh exhibition somewhere. And again, we're thinking holistically now. And in some cases, we'll go down from, say, 14 exhibitions a year to 8 a year at MCA. If we can handle 9 or 10, of course we will, but that's what we think we'll do now. We'll reduce some of our...
Does this put you in a maintenance mode? Because I would assume that with any museum, the fewer exhibitions, the fewer people you have coming in, because you know people aren't going to come to the same exhibition unless it's really special twice, but they'll come to new exhibitions.
To a degree, but I think the secret is in, for instance, you'll notice when you go to the opening of Mars, it looks one way. A month later, it looks different. The exhibitions grow even during the time that they're there to a certain degree, not always, but we try to keep exhibitions interesting, and we also try to make the context of the exhibition interesting by changing the one next door.
At the two museums, youth and the history, natural history, I mean, what is the breakdown in just general nature between planned school groups that show up in like school buses, things like that, and like walk-in or family-type traffic.
Well, the natural history school groups is a huge part of their attendance. I don't have the percentage, but I would guess that it's more than.
Rob, what do you think? More than half.
It's significant. Half would be a good guess.
Yeah. Amy doesn't get a huge school group visits, but they get smaller groups that come more constantly in a funny way. So they have a constant trickle of smaller groups. Sunny, have you got a breakdown?
Excuse me, I'm sorry. What
school groups versus one-to-one visits?
We get about 10 to 15,000 students annually. So I'd say that's about probably 1/4 or so.
Okay. 25% there, and I think natural history it's about 50. I would guess. And there's an area that we can grow as a shared resource. In other words, a central school visit planning bureau, as it were. We'll reduce some of our education programs, some of the children programs at Amy and some of the youth classes at the Mesa Arts Center will have to be reduced. We'll reduce some of the hours of operation. For instance, the Mesa Contemporary Arts hours of operation will now have to be reduced from 28 hours a week. Some of these proposals will come to council for final approval, but that's what we need to do to be able to maintain operations with these levels of cuts. Moving on to the next one, this is how we're going to be managing the reduction. We will flatten our org chart and simply put, we have identified positions that were eliminated all the way from top to bottom, and we're spreading the responsibility across the directors. They're taking on more. We have less layers of hierarchy and much more teams. We're thinking much more horizontally than vertically, and we'll be revising our programming. As I've already mentioned, some of it will have to be reduced. Some of it will go more mainstream, make sure that we offer programs that draw large crowds, more and more of those. And we'll reach out to locals. And in that, I mean local artists, local affiliates, to make sure that they get increased opportunity to be exposed in our various facilities. We'll use contract services during peak times as opposed to have full-time people who do it all year round. We'll expand our focus on shared resources, which I'll do in the separate slide. And we'll strengthen our enterprise initiatives. We are already doing quite a few enterprise type of initiatives, but our rental little business has developed into about a $600,000 a year business, which is a really handy business, and we're going to be expanding that across arts and culture. In other words, we'll put the Arizona Museum for Natural History as a beautiful roof garden, which we'll put on our inventory of rentable spaces. Amy has a few possibilities with their courtyard and the room in the back. The Mesa Contemporary Arts has beautiful venues, which could be venues for functions and little lectures and so on. And we'll make all this part of our inventory for rentals. That expands the rental footprint for facilities in Mesa significantly. And we can make quite a bit of additional revenue come to life by doing that. We'll also expand what box office does, where we have a very good, very able team, very well-trained professionals who do this, but they only sell tickets for the question? I'm sorry?
Yeah.
I'm steaming along.
I did.
You change your slide, too.
You had hit strength and enterprise initiatives. You said you were going to talk about that again in another slide, but I just wanted to revisit the comment I made about parking. Do we charge for parking around the close-in spots of the Arts Center?
Yeah.
How much do we charge?
$5.
$5 for those spaces, and then the farther out spaces, there's still a lot of free parking in downtown Mesa. Okay, thank you.
And we only start charging $5 when we know we have more than 500 cars coming. It's just because whenever we have to charge parking, we have to get staff to do it.
So if they park in behind a downtown business, they can park for free?
Yeah.
And if they were to walk past those businesses and eat there, it would be even especially free for them.
Right.
Great. Okay, thanks.
Somehow we always end up talking about parking. The second to last bullet on this slide, slide 12, I'm still on that slide. We will adjust the fees, and we will expect to see a proposal or a request for adjustment of fees In terms of the natural history, they want to add $1 to their attendance rate, which will come early in January to you, which will enable them to reach the revenue target that they've set. They're well on their way to exceed their revenue target in this budget year by more than $100,000, maybe $150,000, but they want to expand that possibility even and go to the sort of what's considered to be fair market value. They're a little below that at this stage, and it's a capacity we might as well explore, and they'll come to you with a presentation. We'll also adjust some of our fees downwards, and the thinking here is, again, coming back to Council Richens' point about the Mesa Arts Center never really had the honeymoon. It should have had, like any other center that opens in the first 6 months or so, things are really inexpensive. It was the opposite. The moment it opened, cost recovery was an issue, prices went sky high, and the people stayed away, in the classes specifically, in many of the classes. So we want to get back with a modest reduction in some of our class fees and hopefully draw people back for that, and I think that'll work. I think that will be a good strategy.
And once again, to get back to the, because this could be misconstrued as, oh, we're going to give people discounts.
No, no.
The idea is to bring people in, absolutely, get them to experience our facilities with the idea that we're building on the future. We're creating a familiarity, an experience that they will want to repeat at full price. They'll come back for other things. And that should, my general experience has been that when I talk to people who are from outside of Mesa, I have yet to find one that had a negative experience with one of our, whether it be a museum or whether it be the Arts Center. They rave about all across the board. And I think the idea is to get people in, to get them to experience. And I feel, you know, when I'm out talking to citizens, of course, there's people who have very strong feelings about this, and I always ask them if they have actually experienced it. There are people who actually purposely stay away. This is a community asset. Whether we like it or not, it's there. It's built. It's beautiful. It's a community asset. And I hope that citizens of Mesa and citizens from surrounding communities take advantage of the community assets that we have, because they are there for them to enjoy. And I appreciate the fact that you and your staff are working as one of your goals to bring people in to experience our museums and our art center.
Thank you, Mayor. The last point repeats itself, which I hope makes the point. We really are a collaborative team who understands that we're one of the citizens in this city. We collaborate with many other stakeholders in town, in the downtown area, outside of the downtown area. And by collaboration, we are able to do much more than we would have been able to do by ourselves. The shared resource slides talks a little bit about one of the core solutions that we've included in our restructuring package. We're going to be pooling many of the common resources between the three institutions, which would save, obviously save costs and labor. And some of the examples, we had three marketing staff at the Mesa Arts Center, one marketing staff at the Arizona Museum of Youth. We now have three in total, with one having been reduced in this exercise. Those three will now be a team for the full Arts and Culture Department. They will work as a team, will prioritize as a team, and will leverage their combined sources, resource and strength across the full department. Similarly, custodial, we've had to reduce some of the custodial staff in some areas. Our bigger team at the Mesa Arts Center will now be responsible for custodial services at the two museums as well. Rentals will centralize, as I've mentioned. The Mesa Arts Center rental person will now also rent museum spaces. It's a revenue opportunity that we can explore and expand on. Same with our financing operations. The three financial administrators and the three facilities work together now. We have centralized reporting, and that makes life a lot easier. Box office registration will be merged on the Mesa Arts Center campus. It'll do two things. It'll give the Mesa Arts Center campus a single front door, which it currently has a bit of a challenge with four different front doors. There'll be one place. All the arrows will point in one direction, and everybody will know if I go in that to that place, I can do everything I need to do. I have my questions answered at that one place. But the second thing that it'll do, much more related to this exercise, it'll put two teams that had to staff two public service points of sale 12 hours a day together, and we'll have one team that can do it in one space for the same number of hours a day. And in doing that, we were able to reduce some of the part-time and full-time staff without reduction in service. So that'll be happening over the next few weeks. It'll have, as I said, other benefits too. And I've already alluded to this, our exhibition build and installation team. We used to have a resource in the two museums and in the Mesa Arts Center, three separate resources that would plan, build, design, and install their exhibitions. It's now going to be a centralized team, and we'll plan the opening nights so that they don't clash, and the centralized team will go from museum to museum and install and build and design. And again, economy of scale. And the same with programming, which we're beginning to work on. After we've done all of this, back to the slide we saw, I think, on page 8. Now, after the reductions, this is what the 9-10 budget would look like after we've taken the 30% out of the three operations. And I'm proud to say for the very first time that there's an echo in this room. The contribution from the city would be slightly less than the contribution from our earned and contributed revenue. As I said earlier, I don't think this is a holy grail. I don't even think this is a benchmark. But it certainly is a significant trend that we've always been trying to achieve. And the last slide emphasizes that this is a full arts and culture department slide, not just the MAC, although at the top I've just articulated periods in time. The first three referred to a period when the MAC was still in the old building, and then the last refers to with the new MAC. There was a time when the city contributed 85% of all expenditures, direct expenditures for the full arts and culture department, and in the new financial year it'll contribute about 47%, a significant turnaround, which I think is a healthy trend. As I say, I don't know where the benchmark is. I don't know whether 50-50 is the right number. I'm looking at national benchmarks, and they're very hard to find because there are very few apples and apples out there. 60-40 is more typical, 60 city, 40 private earned and contributed. We're now the other way around or heading towards it. I don't know if we can sustain it. It also assumes the levels of contributed and earned income that we have put in the budget. The economy might have something to say about that, which might mean the percentages might change. But it's certainly the way we're budgeting it now looks like we might break the 50% mark.
Okay. Councilmember Summers.
Looking at the two slides, 8 and 14,
yeah,
both of them have your earned in contributions budget, so your revenue have the same numbers. So how can you be confident that you will be able to reach the same amount of revenue in 08, 09, or in 09, 10 as you did last year when you're looking at reducing operating program budget, reducing the number of exhibits, and reducing the hours of operation? So how are you going to be able to match?
Well, it's a combination of a number of things. In terms of the Mesa Arts Center, it's a conservative approach to say we're keeping it the same because we're actually thinking with the kind of programming that's going to be much more mainstream. In other words, every show theoretically would have a larger number of people attending because it's more popular. We should be able to increase the revenue significantly as opposed to having shows where we know we budget for 50% attendance, 60% attendance. Sometimes we know that we do that. So that's one way of reducing some of our operations, although on performing live we're not.
Just real quickly, yeah. I mean, you said something that most people, and you, when you explained it to me, I didn't realize we did this. In art centers, as you explained it to me, and hopefully I can explain this, in order to get a wide array and a wide range of offerings, you actually book acts knowing that they won't sell out.
Absolutely.
So you're trying to cover the different areas.
Yes.
And so what you're saying is that's something that all Art Center do, and that's something the Mesa Art Center has done. Through these slow times, we're focusing more on booking acts that will be maximum revenue generators, which means we may not have as wide of a range of programming,
right,
but we'll have more profitable programming.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you, Mayor. That's a good clarification. Just also in terms of the fact that we may book shows that we know is not going to sell out, another element to just keep in mind there is the theater happens to have 1,500 seats. That doesn't mean when you bring in an act, 1,500 is the right number of seats
right.
for that act. It might
yeah, you
be,
don't necessarily choose to and say no. we're going to lose money, but someone who can draw 750 seats, they're too big for the Piper Theater, too small for that, but they're right. happy coming in with 1,500.
Exactly.
But the difference is that you still have 1,500 seats. You still have to...
We're now going to go after the 1,500 shows.
Yeah.
Okay. Rather than
because the cost of even though 750 might be considered almost the maximum a sellout
for some
for all intents
absolutely.
And purposes, the cost for operating a 1,500 seat don't go down just because you only have 800 people
yeah.
there. Okay.
If we could reduce the number of seats per concert, we would do it. The National Geographic show, we would reduce it to 800, and say that's a good show and it'll fill. But in 2 years, it might fill 1,500. So yes, that's a good point of clarity. So part of the answer is that the other part of the answer is the Arizona Museum of Natural History has actually budgeted to bring in almost 600,000 as opposed to 440. But apples and apples, we didn't put that in this budget because that's part of an indirect cost recovery as well. So they have a higher in their budget for next year, a higher revenue to hit, which is in lieu of. In lieu of cuts to expenditure, they've increased their revenue expectation.
Okay.
Which includes an anticipated dollar increase. That included
exactly.
in that number that will be coming to council in January for special, what's the term you want to
do? Blockbuster type
blockbuster events where they have a special exhibit that comes in for a certain period of time that there would be a dollar increase to us.
We have a couple more quick questions because we're running up on council time. So Councilmember Higgins and then Councilmember Fenter.
The question was on reduced hours. Yes. You said from 48 to 28?
Yeah.
Can you explain?
The reason has to do with, and the hours will generally be from noon to 5. So we've analyzed the typical attendance by hour over the last few months and pick the hours that we, on average, have the highest attendance. So noon to 5 seems to be prime time at MCA. So that'll be the hours that'll be remaining. But the reason we have to go down to those numbers is because of the reduction we're doing, we can't have the two part-time people in the lobby at the registration booth anymore, and the remaining three full-time people will rotate to be outside in the lobby serving as front of house until we've trained enough volunteers again. That reduces the capacity of the number of hours we can actually have people come in, because the moment you open the door, you have to have a staff member down there. And if the full-time staff are there all the time, they can't do office work to prepare for the next exhibit that's coming along. So it has to do with capacity, but we don't think the public will experience it as such a significant loss because, as I said, the morning hours are quiet hours, and they're going to be closed on Sundays except the free Sunday.
And is this all three museums?
No, I was referring to the Mesa Contemporary Arts.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember
Center. Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to let you know I have a new appreciation for the foundations and the Friends organizations. We're putting a lot on them. The
yes.
stress is there, obviously, but I think there's a great opportunity in the future to work with those organizations, improve communications, look at how we do business, and definitely help them to flourish and nourish, you know, those organizations. Also, a quick comment. I think we're going in the right direction. That last slide says it all. Amazing. This last weekend, I was actually saying, wow, as I drove through a couple of times through downtown, lines out the restaurants, activities everywhere, just a real positive way we're going. So I know these are difficult times, but I think with you and the other art staff, we're moving in the right direction. Thank you.
Thanks. I just want to agree with you wholeheartedly about our foundations. Without them, this wouldn't be possible, and the city has huge partners out there, and we should always remember their role in making this work. We need their support. We can't take it for granted. They work hard to raise these dollars. It doesn't come in easy. They go out there to bat for us very, very vocally all the time to raise the money and the dollars we need to operate. So I agree with you, and I thank you for acknowledging them.
Vice Mayor Jones.
And just one last quick comment. Johan, thank you so much for being able to get the coordination between all the entities and break the silos and get people. I know we had this discussion a few months ago of getting people understanding that you're all one group, focus together, and everybody wins when they work together. And you've made that happen, and staff has worked well in doing that. So you're doing amazing things, and thank you very much.
I appreciate it. I'm privileged to work with a great team of people, Mr. Vice Mayor. I really am, and it wasn't difficult to do that. They're a great team. They like doing this, and They're unbelievable professionals, so thank you.
There's nothing else. Thank you, Mr. Zietzman.
Thank you.
Siggins, thank you. Appreciate that. All right, next item on the agenda is acknowledge receipt of minutes from various boards and committees.
Second.
We have a motion from the Vice Mayor, second from Councilman Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We'll skip peer reports and meetings. Mr. Brady, schedule.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to remind the council and really the public, especially businesses in Mesa, tomorrow, December 9th from 3 to 6 p.m. Across the street in the Mesa Plaza meeting room 170, we'll be having our doing business with the City of Mesa, sponsored by our Chamber of Commerce, which we've invited several businesses, especially our automotive businesses, to come and participate to learn how they can do business with us. And just a reminder, we have a study session scheduled for Thursday, December 11th, this Thursday. And it will be the last department that we have scheduled at this time to come forward will be the fire department. And they'll be scheduled to come forward Thursday morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything else? We have a motion. Do we have any requests to speak from Citizens President, Ms. Crocker?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay.
Second.
Have a motion to adjourn from Vice Mayor, second Councilmember Summers. All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned.